Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Workforce and Business Development Committee. I call this meeting to order. This hearing is being conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed on the House webcast. I'm getting a little bit of an echo, so I call the committee legislative assistants to now take the role. Please, everyone, mute your mics and unmute when you're called on. So thank you so much.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor, present. Vice Chair Jay Zhong is excused. Lead Hamilton. Lead Hamilton. Lead Hamilton's connecting to audio. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton, present. Baker.
Baker here.
Baker present. Daphne
present.
Daphne present. Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Greenman. Haley.
Haley present.
Haley present. Jurgens. Cagle.
Present.
Cagle present. Katiza Watun.
Present.
Katiza Watun present. Olson.
Present.
Olson present. Tujong.
Present.
Tujong present. Greenman.
Present.
Greenman present. Jurgens. Jurgens. Mr. Chair, we have quorum.
We have a quorum, members. There's a quorum present. With that, just wanted to let you know we do have two bills. And before we go to the approval of the minutes, I just wanted to note that there's a small correction. So I will now entertain a motion to accept the minutes for the 19th, I believe, of March 2021.
So moved, Mr. Chair. This is Daphne.
Mr. Chair Daphne moves the approval for the minutes for March 19, 2021. There is a small correction. Mr. Chavez, did you want to?
Yeah, we just want to we want to mark down that Representative Baker is excused for the meeting that day.
The correction to the minute was Representative Baker was excused. With that correction as amended, the motion before us, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? See none, the motion prevails. The minutes for March 19, 2021 is now approved. members, we do have two bills, which are the first one is going to be the one that I'm presenting. The next one will be for the governor's budget. I believe, Representative Katiza Watun, you will be chairing the meeting to for the rest of the day until to the end. So, Madam Chair, if you may, Representative Jurgens is also present. So I just wanted to note that.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So members, first up, we have House File 1784. And this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Chair Noor, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you've already stated, House File 1784 will be laid over for possible inclusion. This is small business support, especially for those who are small, disadvantaged businesses. We all know the impact of COVID-19. Even prior to COVID-19, we understood the challenges that many disadvantaged and socioeconomically disadvantaged individuals when they start business. There's also requirement for advisory group and also reporting. Madam Chair and members, I do have a team that is going to be explaining how this bill is significant and how we can be able to support our businesses. Without further ado, I wanted to invite the testifiers on this bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right, so first on the list, I have Stacia Byrace, owner of Abby's Cafe in Minneapolis. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Madam Chair and members. My name is Stacia Byrace, and I own Abby's Cafe in Minneapolis.
and I'm also a member of Main Street Alliance. I began my business 6 years ago with just my savings. I applied for several loans that I would have the means to bring some more staff to help. I didn't have any debts, but my credit score was low because I didn't have any credit history at the time. So every bank I went to would turn me down. For the first 2.5 years, I did it all by myself, with some help of my aunt, who owns her own restaurant in Anoka County, and occasionally one of my loyal customers who would help take orders or do dishes. Otherwise, it was just me, taking orders, doing the cooking, and washing dishes until 2 or 3 in the morning. At that point, at one point, there was a bad storm, and it knocked down my fridges. And I went to the bank again to try to get a loan to cover the cost for new ones, knowing that without it, I would lose my business. Even though I've been in business for 2 years and I could prove that I was making money, I was turned down again. Luckily, my aunt was able to loan me the money, so my business survived. Although the business has grown slowly, it could have been, if I would have had access to capital, I would have been, it would have been faster. I've been successful and been able to get 9 more staff. I'm about to open a new location. I wanted to keep my current location open too, but I needed a loan to make it happen. Just like before, the bank turned me down for a business loan. All I was eligible was a personal loan for $10,000 at a high interest rate. That wouldn't be enough to even make a difference. Back then, I didn't know about LEDC or other lending options. Now that I do, I've been helping. They've been helpful in getting me grants to make it through the pandemic. I think the study of small business programs is a good idea because it shouldn't be so hard to start a business, to create jobs, or to find out about help that is available. Please support House File 1784. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Byres, for your testimony. Next, we have Danny Schwartzman. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, thank you. I'm Danny Schwartzman. I own Common Roots Cafe, which is a restaurant and catering company in Minneapolis. And I'm also the co-chair of the board of the Main Street Alliance's Minnesota chapter. And I really thank you all for letting me share some thoughts today. For me, as a small business owner, there are so many challenges we face. And as Cecilia just talked about, they run the gamut from access to capital to the sort of day-to-day challenges of learning how to run a business and the challenge and confronting the challenges that we all face. And they were challenging in normal times, and certainly the pandemic has only further stressed our small business community. Throughout all of this, there have been support programs that exist that the state provides and that other entities of government provide for small businesses. But for far too many, we don't know what those programs are. They don't necessarily, they aren't necessarily promoted well to us, and we don't have access to them for many of us. And just understanding where we are is really important. I opened my business in 2007. I've cared about these issues since then and since before then, and I've paid pretty close attention. And even for me, I feel like I don't have a good understanding of the full range of programs that exist. And in talking with elected officials and talking with technical assistance providers and talking with lots of different people, I feel like that's a common problem. And so as we think about what we can do to further support small businesses in this exceptionally trying time and to especially confront the equity issues that exist around access to capital and around small business supports, and we know that we have some of the biggest equity issues in the country around these kinds of problems, that when we think about what we can do, knowing where we are and understanding the programs that exist and having some evaluation of best practices, I think is tremendously important. And I'm really excited to have the possibility of a research report that will tell us where we are in a better way so that we can have an informed conversation about what our future might hold and really broaden our support for small businesses down the road as we come out of this pandemic and hopefully make more and more people be able to come out stronger and share the opportunity for prosperity and that we know that our state needs for so many. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartzman. Next, we have Mary Terrace. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Mary Terrace, and I own Strive Publishing, and I am a member of Main Street Alliance. I was driven to start a book publishing company after serving as a public school teacher for 13 years and consistently finding that there are not enough books for students who look like me. Finally, I realized if I wanted to see more children's books that reflected an authentic Black experience, I would have to do something about it. I launched my business in 2018 and since then have published 8 books from 6 different Black authors and 2 Black illustrators. I can only afford to print 100 books at a time, though, which is not cost effective, and marketing is still word of mouth because I can't afford the proper marketing staff for getting my authors and books out there. I have applied for business loans from U.S. Bank, where I've been a customer for over 30 years, and from several CDFIs. All have turned me down because I have a sizable student loan and bad debt-to-income ratio. According to several studies, this is not unusual. Due to racial disparities in generational wealth and income, Black graduates often hold twice as much student debt as whites, and this is depressing entrepreneurship. Doing a study of the state's small business programs is a good idea. Public funds should be used to help those who are not already bankable to start and expand their businesses. With access to a relatively small amount of capital, I could create jobs for editors and illustrators and actually pay myself while centering Black voices. Please support HF 1784. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Terrace. Members, that's all we have on the list for testifiers. Looks like Representative Baker just raised his hand. We can move to member questions and testimony. Go ahead, Ms.
Thank you. Baker. Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. Really appreciate the testifiers here today. I know Cecia and Danny, I know being in the restaurant hospitality industry, it's a real challenge to get these things up and running and to start growing them slowly. And I'm glad to see you guys are doing okay with that. It's really important that we help Minneapolis and St. Paul businesses grow and get back on their feet again after some really, really rough times, just with the unrest as well as the pandemic. So I'm proud to be a co-sponsor on this bill, and I'm glad that Representative Nora is bringing this forward. We'll support this, and what's important about this thing, this bill too, and I want to thank the author for this, is that we're recognizing the small businesses that need a little extra handholding, a little extra guidance in the front end of this thing, and this is an important part of getting the support that they need, because not everyone should be in business. And we have to be honest with people on that it's always a goal and a dream, but it isn't always the right time for everybody to do this too. So we've got to have a good plan underway. And speaking of the small businesses, it's important that we talk about that throughout this whole week because of the federal and the state Planned Parenthood, or the Parent Leave Act coming up, which is important to identify the small business need and the concern that small businesses might have for that type of a thing. But again, thank you, Chair Knorr, for bringing this bill forward. I'm a big supporter of this. I hope we can get this thing moving. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Next, Representative Frankie.
Whoops.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Knorr, Chair Knorr. Yeah, this is a good bill. I really like it. I do have a question about the advisory group, Chair Knorr. It speaks to the 8 small business owners must be appointed by Main Street Alliance. Can you speak a little bit to who Main Street Alliance is and why they are given this specific duty?
Mr. Chair?
Thank you so much, Representative Frank. As you have seen, the study and the component of this study is to target businesses. In fact, we may widen that period just to make sure that we capture even post-recovery. The Main Street Alliance have been involved in on the ground helping businesses, and we do have a representative from the Main Street Alliance with us today who can give us a little bit of a background of how they were involved in this process.
Good. I do see Ms. Frazier on the line. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Beth Frazier. I'm the state manager for Main Street Alliance. We are a small national organization with a Minnesota chapter. We're made up of small business owners who are interested in being involved in public policy issues. And we have members across the state. And so we came up with the idea for this bill and approached Representative Knorr and want to be sure that as the department is looking at the questions about access to capital and the programs that currently are funded with funds that go through the department, we want to be sure that they're consulting with small business owners, a diversity of small business owners, both geographically and racially, as to what has worked, and making sure that small business owners are helping provide input on what questions they're asking, how they're doing the outreach, make sure that when they come back with the results and the recommendations that there's been at least some input from stakeholders so that there's everyone, of course, wants to avoid having a situation where you come back and you're like, wait a minute, you didn't ask this question, or maybe if you'd reached out this way, you would have gotten a different answer. So just wanting to be in consultation with the department as they ask the questions and as they come up with the recommendations and interpret the information.
Thank you, Ms. Fraser. Representative Frankie, do you have a follow-up?
No, sounds good. Thank you very much.
Okay, members, nobody else has their hands up in the air. Do we have any further questions? Okay, then Mr. Chair, I will let you have closing comments on your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members. It's really important that we look into the barriers and obstacles that many small businesses are facing. So this bill will ensure that we can do a thorough study that will reflect where the need is and how we can really support and help the disadvantaged businesses. And I'll be asking for your support on this bill. With that, I renew my motion, House File 1784, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Chair Knorr renews his motion that House File 1784 be laid over for possible inclusion in the committee omnibus bill. The clerk will take the roll.
So, Madam Chair, we're not voting on this bill.
Oh, so. Excuse me. Yep, right. Okay. Got distracted because my glasses got taken off. So, very good. Next, we have a brief overview from fiscal staff. So, Ms. Beckel, if you would like to proceed.
Madam Chair, members, I will share my screen to show the spreadsheet that you have in your virtual packet or on the website. So just one moment, please. Okay, are you all able to see the spreadsheet on the screen? Awesome.
Yes, we can. Yeah.
Okay, so this spreadsheet just shows the appropriation authority for the Workforce and Business Development Committee. I show the spending from fiscal years 18 and 19, the actual, and then some estimated spending from fiscal years 20 and 21. 21 is, of course, not quite done yet. And then I show the base forecast for fiscal years 22 and 23, and the tails forecast of fiscal years 24 and 25. In years past, this committee or a similar committee had more agency accounts, but this year the accounts are primarily the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and then I've also separated out the Destination Medical Center, but that is also administered by the Department of Employment and Economic Development. This spreadsheet just shows either direct appropriations or statutory funding exclusively out of the general fund. And when you look at line 4, number 2, the Destination Medical Center, that's all statutory general fund funding related to previous legislation, of course. So the next item down here is the Workforce Development Fund spending. This does not show the entire situation of the Workforce Development Fund, but rather the funds that were directly appropriated in the relevant year. So now I'm going to go down and share a bit of the detail about DEED's funding. Of course, they can provide quite a bit more detail on their funding, but this is what this committee concerns itself with. So there is the Business and Community Development Division. They get appropriations from the General Fund, the Remediation Fund, and the Workforce Development Fund. Then I have some showing just fiscal years 18 and 19 so that I could give you an accurate read of what the fiscal year 18-19 spend was. As you can see, this committee does a lot of direct appropriations to the commissioner for transfer to or for grants to small organizations. So you can see a list of those there. Okay, continuing down, you may have noticed that fiscal years 20 and 21 seemed rather higher than 18 and 19 or the base forecasted spending. A lot of this was the response to the COVID pandemic. So this, for example, was the Small Business Emergency Loan Program transfer of funds. Then DEED has the Workforce Development or Employment and Training Division, and they appropriate from the General Fund and the Workforce Development Fund. And you can see that there's quite a bit of Workforce Development Fund appropriations here. Then there's, of course, the General Support Services Division, the Minnesota Trade Office, the State Services for the Blind, and Vocational Rehabilitation Services. And those are all of the divisions for DEED that this committee directly appropriates to. Then I've just separated out some larger items from this past biennium. Many of you, of course, remember the special session number 7, the grants to large venues, and of course the unemployment insurance contingent appropriation of $25 million from December. And then, of course, we have the Destination Medical Center, the statutory appropriations. And these are monitored by MMB throughout the year, and their numbers just automatically go into the base. So as you can see, it's effectively a matching fundraising program for the Destination Medical Center in Rochester, Minnesota, and they expect them to do fairly well with their fundraising, but the numbers are increasing as expected. And I will stand for questions, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Ms. Beckel. I think, members, you do have this in your packets, and if you have any question in regards to the presentation from Ms. Beckel, please let me know. Otherwise, we do have the commissioner for the informational hearing, and also for the members from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I don't see any questions. Commissioner Grove, welcome to the committee again, and please proceed with your presentation for the House File 1342.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good to see you all again, and thanks for having us today. We're thrilled to walk through the governor's supplemental budget requests. I'm joined by my colleagues, Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development, Kevin McKinnon, and Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development, Hamza Warfel, who you'll hear from in just a moment, and of course by Daryl Dannon, our legislative director here at DEED. Hope you're all well. Happy Monday, and lots to look forward to here as we look at the remaining weeks and months of the session, and lots of good conversations on the state's economic recovery. We're going to pull up a deck here and walk through some of the details of the governor's supplemental budget, which you saw unveiled a matter of days ago. And in particular, we're going to take a deep dive into the Workforce Development Fund, which is, as you all know, a critical fund in preparing our state's workforce for the jobs that are available across Minnesota. So just before we dive into sort of the news stuff, I wanted to just kind of give a holistic picture of the governor's budget. So we'll move to a slide here in just a moment where you'll see just kind of an overview of everything that was in the governor's original budget that he submitted a few months ago. Unemployment insurance changes that we discussed, the emergency COVID-19 support fund for small businesses, some technical assistance for small businesses, primarily those started and run by BIPOC entrepreneurs, a broadband grant program, Launch Minnesota, our initiative for startups, the Angel Tax Credit, also helping those early stage companies get capital, SBDC program funding for helping small businesses grow in the coming years, and some appropriation bonds to help rebuild Minneapolis and St. Paul. But wait, there's more. Another slide with some additional priorities here. You'll see the Child Care Economic Development Grant Program, paid family medical leave. That money goes into building a platform that would allow that system to succeed. Labor market information costs for research, expanding our job training incentive program to focus on automation, some budget reductions to make all of this work, an operating adjustment to ensure we can deliver, and then a couple of minor things, some donations for SSB being allowed to be deposited in a foundation that's cost neutral. We talked about that in our original presentation. Then one thing we didn't talk about but just wanted to highlight is that the Department of Commerce is carrying some legislation to ensure that the petrol fund taxes that are used to use in cleanup grants is not going to sunset. That if it doesn't sunset, then $12.4 million from those taxes that come in for Petro would be used for some of our contamination cleanup grant programs at DEED. So funded by taxes, but wanted to just mention those here because they will end up in the final package of the governor. And then some new priorities we'll talk about today. And so not a bunch of major shifts, but a couple that we want to walk through in more detail. On the whole, the governor's theory and thesis with this legislation is that the COVID-19 pandemic has been an uneven effect on our economy and on the health of Minnesotans, and we want to make sure we take care of those who've been hardest hit by the pandemic with our budget requests. And so in addition to the original budget request, supplemental took that same thesis as we looked at what we wanted to prioritize in this session. So in terms of the supplemental, there's four things we'll walk through today. First, we'll walk through the Workforce Development Fund and the revisions that we are making to realign that fund to prepare Minnesota for the next chapter of our economy. We'll talk about the Nonprofit Assistance Grant Fund to help some of our newer, more fledgling nonprofits get the back office support they need to help deliver adequately on workforce development. We'll talk about eliminating a funding shift for extended employment and then some administrative support for the appropriation bond that I spoke of just a moment ago, again, focused on rebuilding Minneapolis and St. Paul. So we'll start with the Workforce Development Fund. And as I mentioned today, I'm joined by Hamza Warfa, the Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development at DEED. I'm stating his name for the record here because he'll chime in as we go along through this section. And this is really an important component of DEED's budget. And we've talked to some of you about this in person. We've mentioned it in some previous presentations, but wanted to take a little bit of a deeper dive to explore what exactly we're proposing we change about the state's Workforce Development Fund and why we're proposing these changes. As a reminder, this is a fund that is put together by a 0.1% payroll tax from every employer in the state. And those dollars that business contributes to this fund end up creating about $120 million, even north of that, dollar fund every couple of years that we can use to prepare our state's workforce for those businesses. And it's a really unique thing in Minnesota. No other state in the nation has this fund, and it has always been a huge differentiator for us as a state, really setting us apart as a place where we invest in talent and help talent grow. That fund, created back in the late 80s, has really not been meaningfully changed since it was conceived of. And we think it's long past overdue to take a better look at how we could more effectively distribute those funds for our modern economy. It's several decades later, and we want to create a fund that works for the needs that we have today. And really the primary principle that we are operating here, and again, based on conversations with all of you, with stakeholders across the state, with businesses and others, is that we really need to root the principles of this fund in equity. We know that those workers in Minnesota that come from BIPOC communities face much bigger barriers to employment, systematic barriers to employment, and that in fact, our entire workforce is growing from people of color in the next several decades. 70% of Minnesota's workforce will come from people of color in the coming 10 years, we have to have a workforce development fund that recognizes those realities and is therefore arranged and built to combat those inequities and create equal opportunity for all. So that's really a foundational principle here that we've brought to reimagining this fund. But there are several more too. And as we've gone through really a statewide tour of discussing this fund with, again, so many stakeholders, these are the things that we've heard. We've heard you've got to prioritize this fund more for equity. You've got to have simple, really streamlined metrics for success. What is this fund seeking to achieve? And how can we track that over time and make smart decisions based on a definition of success we can all get behind? We want to have a grant-making model that is fair, that tracks that performance and equity quarter over quarter. But at the same time, we want to create room for new innovative approaches. And you can do both things at the same time. You can both have a performance-driven system and also create room for new entrants, new ideas. And we'll talk about how we've constructed that possibility in just a moment. And then, as you all know, you hear from your constituents every single day, there are a lot of workforce issues that don't just have to do with getting the right training, but they have to do with being able to take that training in the first place, whether it be adequate childcare for your kids or transportation to get to a job or not, or housing that makes a sustainable life that allows you to have a job, or health. All these adjacent issues to workforce are central to making sure that we have workforce that works for our businesses and works for our state. So you've got to be able to attack that component of the problem too. And then we have seen year over year a fund that has not been particularly efficient in the sense that there are a lot of dollars that get bottled up in dislocated worker program allocations that we believe if you made them a little more flexible and allowed the governing boards of this whole fund to move dollars throughout the year, you could do a much better job of ensuring that you're actually spending the money businesses give us on workforce year over year in a way that prepares our economy for the needs that those employers have. So a lot of things we've been hearing, again, from legislators and workforce development partners and businesses and others across the state. We've done dozens and dozens of meetings on this, and we've come to a proposal that we'll walk through now that we believe tackles these components in a way that will make this fund much better for Minnesota and much better for our businesses and our workers. So I'll give a quick outline of how we're looking at the funding flow, and then I'll turn it over to my colleague, Hamza Warfa, who can walk through some of the details. He's been an instrumental architect of really building this approach. At a high level, what we're saying is this, that 0.1% payroll tax that comes in through the system from our employers would make its first stop in the value chain to competitive grant programs. These competitive grant programs would be rooted in equity. Every organization that would apply for a competitive grant would have to have a demonstrated history of and thesis on how to ensure BIPOC Minnesotans are served. And these grant programs would very much take a look at a performance-driven system to select winners. We would use the three basic metrics, which Hans will get into in a moment, to ensure that we select the right nonprofits. And we'd have three different programs such that you have a competitive program for the basic workforce development, an innovation program for new ideas and new entrants, and then a support services program for those kind of wraparound services I talked about a moment ago. Now, notably missing from this funding flow is a whole series of direct appropriations. You saw Solveig just a moment ago go through all the direct appropriations that are made into the Workforce Development Fund. And this committee has heard several powerful testimonies from organizations who do great workforce development work, who have come to this committee asking for a direct appropriation throughout the session. And that's no surprise. That happens every legislative session. However, we think that there's a better way to get at this. And the reason we think that is because at the end of the day, at the end of this legislative session, you'll have the House and the Senate and the governor's office in a room making decisions about who gets workforce development dollars. And if we're making that just based on a list of direct appropriation asks, we're not sure that's the best way to efficiently and fairly allocate funds or to keep equity really in the center of the picture. And so our suggestion would be to really lean into these competitive grant programs that have the right guidelines, have the right performance metrics, have the right thesis in mind to make sure that the money is fairly distributed. And again, that it focuses on equity as the primary goal of these grant programs. And Hans will get into that in a moment. So after those grant programs, 30% goes to the dislocated worker program. As a reminder, this is the program that helps those who've just recently had a job and have been dislocated find new work. We know that this last 5 or 6 years, in fact, even beyond, has shown decreased uptick rates in this program. It is an important program. But as a reminder, federal dollars go into that program as well. And so any additional state dollars for dislocated worker are entirely on top of those existing federal dollars. And again, we're the only state that has those additional funds on top of the federal dollars for dislocated worker. We still need to devote extra funding to it as described here, but we think we can do it more efficiently given the run rates of that program, and 30% will more than enough cover it. 5% of the funding would go to the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership. This is a really innovative program that partners educational institutions with businesses to create bespoke training programs for those businesses to help their workers succeed and to hire new workers. It's a great program and one we can fund adequately at this level. And then notably here, to make the fund more efficient, every year on March 1st, which would be sort of beginning into that final quarter of the year, the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Board would take a look at those dislocated worker funding dollars, and rather than just bottle them up and carry them forward to the next year, we'd say, all right, well, what do we think the economy is doing? Do we need to retain those funds for additional dislocated worker spends in the fourth quarter? Or do we release those to other workforce programs to ensure that other organizations can get the money and keep moving on workforce development? And that kind of efficiency that you should expect in a well-run fund is important. And again, having that flexibility on that March 1st timeline to make that decision, we think will be a lot more effective way to run the fund and allow the board to respond to the economy based on where it's at and more effectively distribute dollars. So that's kind of the big picture of the funding flow. And I'm going to turn over to my colleague, Hamza Warfa, who runs our Workforce Development Department, to walk through some of the details on the competitive grant programs, how we're thinking about performance, and again, making sure that this whole program is rooted in equity. So Hamza, over to you.
Great. Thanks, Commissioner. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us today. What I would like to do is just maybe provide a little bit more context on...
Deputy Commissioner, please yes. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Sorry, yep. Sure, Chairman. Hamza Warfa, Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development at the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. And so as the Commissioner, highlighted, what I would like to do is just provide a little bit more context on how decisions will be made on these three different competitive grants. But I first want to start, you know, that the programs you see here under the Workforce Competitive Grants, you'll see most of the what we call the signature programs that you have funded in the past remain the same. So Pathways to Prosperity with slight revisions to improve the efficiency of the program remains the same. The Minnesota Family Resiliency Program is what we used to call Displaced Homemaker Program. So that also remains the same. What's new in this bucket is a Bridge to Success. It's a new program that will address, you know, the digital divide, the multiple challenges that we already knew existed, but, you know, COVID has accelerated those challenges and this great divide. An example of that is, you know, people who could not get services virtually because they did not have computers, they did not have internet. So we want to address those programs through the Bridge to Success specifically for those who already had multiple barriers. So this is a multiple barrier program under that workforce grant funding area. The second is the Workforce Innovation Grant. So number of organizations with great ideas have not had an opportunity to join our portfolio as a grantee. So this fund will provide that new idea, new approach, new organizations. But also existing organizations can apply flexible funding to test out new idea. And then the third is the Workforce Support Services. This is a program that exists, but because of the multiple barriers, you know, we want to see an expanded funding for this program so that it can tackle things like transportation needs, tackle things like translation and linguistic services needs, childcare, you know, needs and things like that. And the way decisions would be made is in the last cycle, biennial, we introduced, you know, the agency has always, you know, over the last 4 years used a community review panel. We have strengthened that program last cycle so that we had community representation, community members who have deep ties to the communities, who understand what the real challenges and needs of the communities are. So we have incorporated that and received recommendation from community reviewers. And so we will strengthen that program and expand that program so that decisions are not coming from top down, but we're getting the insights and perspectives of community members as a community review panel. We're also introducing, you know, we've streamlined the process because one thing we have heard consistently is it takes a long time to get grants for PEEP. And also sometimes we don't know the decision criteria for decision-making that, you know, led to a funding or not funding. So we're going to create more transparency in the process so that every organization, every applicant will know what scoring criteria we're using to ensure that, you know, their program, they know why they're funded or why they were not funded. And then the third area is efficiency and speed. So we reduced the time it takes to get a response or a decision from an application from 8 months on an average to about 4 months. So we are also committing that process again. One thing that we're also doing is that we are engaging proactively communities. So while the session is going on, we're meeting with communities across the state to ask, you know, what can we do to improve our processes? What feedback do you have? But also really to share information on what our programs are, what the vision is, so organizations have enough time to prepare, you know, as they plan to submit applications. We have also extended the time it takes for grantee to submit the application. So anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks will be the timeline for organizations to apply. If you can move to the next slide. And so that really is an important, and this is an area that we think when it comes to performance, we have heard consistently from you as lawmakers. You would like to see a consistent matrix that's tied to any funding coming from agency. We have the uniform report, but what we have heard from many of you is that the uniform report is extensive and there's a lot of different evaluation metrics that we use. So to simplify that process, we think these three things are the most important. Did you get a job and did you retain, you know, your job? Secondly, consistent with One Minnesota goal of family sustaining wage, we would like to see the wage rate that so that we can help our members move up to the family sustaining income goal. And then the third is, you know, have you received credential, accredited credential that would allow you to transfer as you move from one job to another, should that be the case for you. So this is really, really, really important and why I think we as an agency are proposing using this framework so that any funding that would go to direct appropriation can still achieve the same goal within this framework of tying performance evaluation, ensuring there's a nimble and flexibility in the funding, that there's a trust in the process with community reviewers, and there's efficiency in the time it takes and the tools that we use so that everyone can see the process from end to end. Next slide. And so this is also, I think we both, the commissioner and I covered already, but you know, there are a lot of new ideas that can move our workforce, you know, development system ahead. And we wanna make sure that we're providing, you know, nimbleness to test out and explore, experiment new ideas that would advance, you know, the goals that we have as a state. Next slide. Yeah, so equity, everything that we are proposing here, equity is at the center of it. And we are not doing this as just an idea of research or experimentation, but this is really critical to the success of our economy. It's critical to the success of our communities. This is what we heard consistently from job seekers and businesses at the same time. So supply and demand requires us to address this issue of equity and making sure that equity is at the center of the proposed change that we are making here. So hence funding more BIPOC community organizations, ensuring that there's an equity benchmark in the scoring criteria that we use, ensuring that we have processes when it comes to the community review that is reflected of the diversity that exists in our state, and also ensuring that we, you know, we are not tying funding to an inflexible model, which is the existing system we have when it comes to dislocated worker funding funding program, ensuring that the program remains as essential as it is, but when the program is not fully utilized, using those funds to advance workforce training and placement. And so with that, I will conclude my remarks and look forward to questions and discussions.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. To the Commissioner, Commissioner Grove.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Deputy Commissioner. I just say in summary on this item before we move to the final three changes in the governor supplemental, you know, we think this is one of the most important things we can do this session, and it's not a budget ask. There's no additional money being asked for here. There's no additional funding being asked for, but we're trying to realign this fund to make it work for Minnesota's modern economy. And we think if we can root this program in equity, if we can guide it with performance, if we can make it flexible enough to include both innovative and competitive programs, and if we can ensure it's an efficiently run fund, we'll do a lot better for both job seekers and employers. So more to come on that, but wanted to go through the final three items, which we'll spend a lot less time on here, but just to round out the changes to the governor's budget. The next one is to create a nonprofit assistance grant fund. This would be separate from the workforce development fund, but it would be a $1 million appropriation per year added to base funding for an organization called Propel that does nonprofit capacity building, and they would then run a grant program out to nonprofits for this funding. It allows newer nonprofits or new entrants to the market to get that help, that kind of back office support of how to build a nonprofit that functions well, that keeps strong balance sheets, that that is effective and efficient. Propel is a great organization that can do this work. It's an important program. And again, to this idea of making a system that works for newer entrants, so that it's not just the same organizations every time, but we get newer entrants into the field, this nonprofit assistance grant program would help some of those newer entrants really get up and running quickly so that they can be efficient and effective in their work. So that's one additional item we did have in the supplemental. Another component to our supplemental budget was, you may recall, it's a minor component, but in our original budget, we had a funding shift of the extended employment program at DEED that serves people with disabilities to find jobs. And we are just going to suggesting that we eliminate switching the funding from the Workforce Development Fund, from the general fund to Workforce Development Fund. We're going to switch it back. That actually gives us more money in that Workforce Development Fund. And given the brighter budget outlook, that shift is no longer needed. So budget neutral here, but just a shift we wanted to highlight. And then lastly, we have an administrative support ask for the bill around appropriation bonds, for the appropriation bonds and the COVID-19 support dollars. We have an additional funding ask. It's a small one, but to support a half of an FTE, costs about $50,000 to ensure we can run that program smoothly. So those are really the major components of the supplemental budget request from the governor. We're honored to have the chance to share it with you today. And Mr. Chair, with that, I'll turn it back over to you for any questions.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. So I know I see Representative Haley has got a question. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Knorr. And Chair Knorr, just tell me what your timing is. I have a number of questions, so if I won't be offended.
We do have a lot of questions coming from members. At least if you can ask two questions, and then we'll get back to you if we have more time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Grove. And you and I have had conversations about this fund, so there's some of the input that I just want to be on public record for. But first of all, can you let us know exactly the dollar amounts in the 65% category, the 30% for dislocated workers, and then the remaining at the workforce support programs, the actual dollar amounts, and that would be allocated under this proposal? And if you have to follow up via email, that's fine too.
Commissioner Grove.
Mr. Chair, Representative Haley, it's a great question. It depends on what the receipts will be into the Workforce Development Fund every year. And frankly, it depends on what the legislature and the governor decide to do as it relates to direct appropriations. If there are direct appropriations, that money would come off the top, and those percentages would then indicate a smaller investment. So again, our suggestion is to not do direct appropriations at all, but to rebuild the system in this way. But it would kind of depend on what ends up happening as it relates to how much money is there. But you know, again, past funds have been between $120 to $130 million total. So you can kind of do the math on it with that cap, but it sort of depends based on how the direct appropriation component plays out. I should note as well that those competitive grant programs, including the support services and the innovative grant programs that Commissioner Warfar went through, would all be allocated to 50% Greater Minnesota, 50% Metro breakdown. I don't know if we mentioned that or not, but wanted to make sure we shared that too.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. So, Commissioner, the way it's currently proposed, there is no transfer from general fund money into the new model. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Haley, that's correct. We are not asking for any additional money into the Workforce Development Fund. Again, it is funded by that payroll tax. This is a proposal on how we reform the use of the fund once it is generated through that payroll tax.
Representative Hale, did you have a quick one?
Maybe I can just give a couple comments on the things that I hope can still be worked on. I am a big fan for results-based accountability in this area. This is a lot of money that flows in directly from our business owners all across the state. And so a change that reflects more accountability is a good change. But there are some things that, like I hope can still be worked on. First of all, I would like to look at the 65% being targeted to the industries that are in most demand for workers. We know what those are in our state, and we even know by region. So I'd like to see more focus there. I also appreciate the concern for equity in the BIPOC communities, but I would like that language to really reflect the community realities across our state and, you know, add language that the focus is on all underserved communities. And the commissioner and I have talked about this. In the innovation grant piece, I think we should allow existing organizations to also somehow play in that arena because we want everybody to innovate. We don't want to say that the folks that have gotten grants from D before aren't going to be held accountable to innovation and doing things differently so that we can, you know, support workers across the state. On the last bucket, the other programs for workforce, I want to make sure that we're not overlapping. You know, we know we have a large need in childcare, as an example, and in housing. And there's lots of other bills moving through the legislature. There's other agencies that are in charge of those needs, and we're going to get federal money. So I want to make sure that we're aligning and we're not creating, you know, another process for people to go through. So in that area, to me, it's really more about alignment and having your counselors in this workforce area direct people, you know, to the right programs. Finally, and maybe the most significant, and Commissioner and I talked about this, I would love to see statewide goals. What's our target to decrease unemployment? What's our target to have more workers have a credential? What's our target to have more BIPOC workers in a job that pays a living wage? Let's set some goals and see how we're going to move the needle. Again, significant dollars that businesses are paying in. Let's show the accountability to those dollars. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the indulgence, and thanks, Commissioner, for the proposal.
Thank you so much, Representative Haley. Did you want to comment, Commissioner Grove, I see?
Well, I know there's lots of questions. I'll be brief, Mr. Chair. Representative Haley, all great points. We'll take all those back into consideration. And I think couldn't agree with you more on performance standards and setting big goals. That's what our state deserves right now. And part of that goal in putting those three main performance indicators out there was to say, look, we need to get straight on what we're trying to achieve here, and it's placements, wage rate, and credential. And even that itself is a major shift from the past, in which we had 12, 13, 14 metrics we're asking for, and it wasn't clear what the output we were looking for at the end of the day was. So we think that process is a first step, but I agree with you on broader goals, and we think we should set some very ambitious goals for putting people into family-sustaining wage jobs. So eager to work with you on that too.
Mr. Chairman, I see.
Can I?
Deputy Commissioner, go ahead.
Chair and members of the committee, I just wanted to clarify the point about the innovation grant. So existing organizations who already have a relationship with BEAD are still eligible to apply under the innovation grant. So they are not excluded from applying to the innovation bucket as well. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think I wanted to touch on something about the equity side of things, too. And I was going to maybe ask Commissioner Grove about, again, I live in Wilmer, Minnesota. We've got a lot of, we have a real great community of color here that as an employer myself, I have a couple years ago reached out and we've hired a number of East African women to work in our hotel, doing an amazing job. But my biggest challenge was actually finding how do I reach into that community in a proper way because of the language barrier. With our work on getting these communities and especially communities of color, is there a way that, again, white owners like me can find a better connection to those communities of color so that I can have faster results and could have maybe reacted quicker to having that connection? Because we've only got a few employers in our area, and they've been here for several decades. We've got to expand the workforce and who they are touching and what hospitality, whether it's food processing. I'm looking for this rethinking of the department about how we can reach out to this. Is there a better way that we can find connections to current owner operators, to new workforces? But we've got to get this language thing developed. Is there a plan for either commissioners on the call to kind of help us, other employers, with that kind of an idea?
Commissioner Grove and Deputy Commissioner Werfel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, it's a great point. And as a business owner yourself, you know these points very, very well, having experienced them. I will defer really to Hamza to go into the details here, but I will say this is a huge priority. And one of the things we want to see in these competitive grant programs is organizations coming forth with ideas on that front, because we don't think the state always knows the best direction to go here. So we're hoping to see some really exciting proposals come forward from organizations that specialize in exactly this kind of cultural connection that you're talking about. But I want to turn over to Deputy Commissioner Warfa, who works about on this and thinks about it every day.
Chairman and the members of the committee, the communities that, you know, represent our diverse populations are best when they are the best connectors between mainstream organizations and businesses in the communities. So we would like to see more community-based organizations that are taking an active role in helping, you know, being the connector between mainstream businesses and organizations and community members. The second is something that we're doing here at BEAD, which is, you know, helping employers across the state with DEI work, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and, you know, helping with best strategies and how you recruit, new BIPOC members to your business. So we have launched that work already, and there is a certification that comes with it. So that's really another way that we think we can connect, you know, communities and businesses. But the most impactful way is really ensuring that the funding that we provide as an agency goes to these organizations that are representing our diverse populations.
Representative.
And Mr. Chair, just to follow up, and I'll maybe reserve my second question for other members first, if we've got time. But great point. Thank you. What I do hope is if you find the dollars for those organizations that, Mr. Warfa is mentioning, I need to make sure they connect with us, our employers all over Minnesota. That is a big void right now. We've got to find a better way to connect, whether it's through our local chambers of commerce, if it's through other economic development offices. That is a missing link right now that I think a lot of people can get hired quickly if we had a better process on how to connect those dots. So I look forward to maybe seeing that work. Happy to be a part of that work to develop what is it like to be, again, a small business. Commissioner Grove knows many times I love to throw my advice as little as it is and as good as it is or a little as bad as it is. We have to tell you what it's like to be an employer and what we really need to keep employees getting to work, helping us understand what their needs and their cultural needs are. Those are things that we really want to understand. There's a lot of employers like me that want to learn it, and we have to have help in understanding it better. So with that, I'll pause for now. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. I think that's a good question. In one time in my life, I had an employer who started a big project, but they didn't know how to connect with the employees. And quite frankly, I helped them connect with, a diverse workforce. They listened. They listened to the needs of the people. They reacted properly. They provided transportation because of the distance from the employer. All those things need to be taken into account. And also they provided the training. So all those things are, you know, helpful, and they decided to diversify the employers so that they can have management level reflect the employees that they were hiring. With that, I wanted to allow Representative Jorgens to ask his questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome back, Commissioner. And you know, I think I read somewhere where you're the father of twins, and I'm the grandfather of twin babies that live with us. So someday we got to get together, and you can give me some tips on that. But my question is, when you were here earlier this session, one of the bills we talked about was House File 728, the $300 million appropriation bonds. And I don't see that in here. I'm just wondering if that's taking a different path, or if that didn't bubble up as far as one of the top priorities as session moved on, or what the governor's stance is on that now.
Just to quickly respond to that, I think the governor makes recommendation to the House. We make the decisions in terms of how much we want to spend. And you have seen that bill come forward to us. So that was the Representative Lee's bill. And right. We are seriously considering that as part the pathway forward as we look into, but I'll let the commissioner respond to that question.
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Jorgens, that's right. It's still a priority. It is still on the governor's list. It's a separate bill in a separate committee in that sense. So you might not have had the visibility in the sheet you were seeing, but it's still very much a priority of the governor and lieutenant governor, and something that we're eager to work on. Let's swap twin dad and grandpa advice. All right. I could probably use some from you too. It's
looking forward to it.
Hands are full.
Any follow up, Representative Jones? Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. I guess my question would start out as a statement, and then I'll go into the question. You know, the workforce fund is based on payroll tax and jobs. And I guess my question would be, and I didn't see it in here, and I'm not sure, but does the governor plan to invest in hospitality and tourism and getting the reopening messaging out? Because we spent so much time kind of almost demonizing this industry, and for good reason. I get it. I've been a part of it. I've been more than happy to keep people safe. But one way to grow the workforce fund and to grow these jobs and our economy is to invest in getting this messaging back out once we get to that point that this industry is available, ready, and willing to serve people safely. And I was wondering if that investment was talked about within the governor's budget.
Commissioner Grove.
Mr. Chair, Representative Frankie, it's a great point. And certainly no one in our administration has ever wanted to demonize this industry. If anything, we've continually thanked them for the extraordinary sacrifices they've made, and they are extraordinary over the last year. But you're right. This industry does need a shot in the arm as our economy hits this inflection point. We start to see more people going out there and engaging in restaurants. And since this is a public hearing, I'll just take this moment to say, if you're in Minnesota out there, go out to a restaurant, go out to your local businesses, spend money locally, go to the gym, just do it safely. Wear a mask, stay 6 feet apart. And I talk to business owners every single day who've done amazing things to make their environment safe for customers. So we do hope that people are out there doing it. But I think your bigger question is, should we be spending some money or, you know, focusing our attention on whether it be marketing dollars or, you know, amplifying the opportunities that are out there for businesses? And I think it's an interesting idea. We have not included it in this budget, but I will say that obviously we're looking at additional funding streams that are going to be coming in from this $1.9 trillion package. I was just in the conversation earlier today with John Edmond over Explore Minnesota Tourism on how we can think about some of the needs of the tourism industry. So I think that's a robust discussion, and we look forward to ideas from you and other members too on how we might tackle that, because we're going to need to be really aggressive in this comeback phase. We can't just expect our economy to kind of come back to the way it was or come back to a new normal or whatever it might be kind of on its own. We have to be assertive and aggressive as Minnesotans to really champion this state and its business industry and its tourism opportunities and the like. So I'm glad you raise it. I think it's something we'd like to keep talking with you about.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's great to hear, because I do have a bill, House File 1570, that designates some money to Explore Minnesota for just that fact. So I'll continue to push that, and hopefully we can work together to get this and make the connections and get these people back to work to increase this workforce fund, to increase those dollars that can help the community and our economy overall. So thank you, Commissioner Grove.
Thank you so much, Representative Frankie. I know I have tons of questions, but I wanted to allow Representative Baker to ask his question.
Oh, and thanks, Mr. Chair. I just didn't want to cut anyone else off. If you've got a number of them myself, I know that I've already had a swing at the bat. Is that okay? Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you. And again, this may be the last chance I have a chance to see Commissioner Grove here in the meeting this year, and a lot of things are going to continue to happen, and I've had just a really solid relationship with the commissioner indeed through the last 12 months, and he certainly knows the frustration of a restaurant operator, and I think he knows that he appreciates what we're trying to do. You know, Commissioner, I appreciated the last movements that the governor has made, getting some things open a little bit more. Some little decisions right now, Commissioner, could go a long way if you could please share this with your team. Really seriously looking at a 6-foot barrier down to a 4-foot, 3-foot barrier. As CDC has said in schools, this is a safe place to go. Our restaurants can't really do a lot with 75% if we don't have a little wiggle room with some space. And also our industry really needs kind of maybe that 10-person table to come back as well. I think that there's been some real confusion out there. Those little tiny steps right now mean a lot to getting us back to normal, hopefully by the summer. And when I say normal, it isn't like it was 3 years ago normal. It's a new normal. But I want you to know that these little decisions right now and helping us see the steps to getting there are super helpful. I also wanted to say that you know, I've offered up to some different groups, the governor's office as well. A couple years ago, we had a big turkey burger feed on the Capitol grounds when turkey was under attack because of the avian flu. I throw that offer out there. We need to do a big fish fry this year with the governor, helping us cook and create this enormous media event, Commissioner, to show our hospitality industry that he is really behind us, that we can do this in a bipartisan manner. We hope that that can be done. Governor's fishing opener is coming soon in Otter Tail County. We want that to be a big success story. And also, I hope that we see the governor in a restaurant soon, taking some pictures, letting people know that this is actually okay to do. I know that you've encouraged it. Maybe he's doing it. I haven't seen it, but I just know we just need to see him in our industry a little bit more if we can. So, and we've got to get people back to work. My final comment is you've got a lot of rethinking and retooling of the agency and sort of how the workforce development maybe can work better. Our biggest fear right now is coming into this pandemic, into this year, this session, we have a incredible upside down market that so many people are able to stay home and make more money than they actually can go to work. That we've never seen before with unemployment, as robust as it is, as good as it is. So it's unusual. So Commissioner Grove, do you have anything with your rethinking of this pivoting this year, what we can do to help and you know, whether it's getting employers to start getting, if you want to call it dinged, if people turn you down and the unemployment experience mod starts going up, which again, we don't want to see happen with employers, but that gets them fired up about people getting back to work. We've got to get folks kind of changing that dynamics. Do you see your department, your agency working for that type of a unique situation that we're in today, anything like that? And then I'll just stand back and listen, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Grove.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, thank you for all those questions and points. And the feeling's mutual. The whole state has gotten a lot of value from your advice and leadership over the last year, and we hope to continue to get it. We're going to need it. We're all going to need it. On your point specifically on the restaurant component, you're right. That issue of the table size is a big one. The issue of social distancing remains a big one. Curfew comes up still a decent amount too as this component where you're just not quite fully up to speed. We knew that 75% was not possible for most restaurants. They told us that, but we figured we wanted to set a cap that at least allowed as much as we could, given 6 feet of distance was still there. Most told us 65 to 70 was like probably the max they could do, but hopefully it's helpful. But yes, you're right. We don't want curfews and we don't want table size limitations for much longer at all. But as we've seen in this pandemic, things can turn quickly. Unfortunately, numbers are starting to tick back up again with these variants and other things. We're tracking it closely, but the governor very much wants to be in a dial forward orientation versus anything else. So good points, and we'll continue to track them. We know the details actually matter, especially with Easter coming up and these other bigger holidays where people traditionally celebrate. Which leads me to your second point on consumer confidence in the media. You know, the governor just said nothing would make him happier. Nothing would be more blissful than to be walking down Dad Patch Avenue with a corn dog in his hand. He wants to get out there very much. As you've seen this last week, COVID has not left us. He is in quarantine right now, given the he was in the same room as a staffer who contracted COVID-19. So it's a reminder for all of us that we are not out of the woods yet. But we have a governor who loves being out there and wants nothing more than to do that and to demonstrate to Minnesotans that it is going to be safer as summer comes and more people are vaccinated to get out there and engage in our economy. We know that it's not just talk, it's not just symbolism, it's critical to our economic recovery that we all model that behavior and show what we want to see in our state as people get out and spend more money as the pandemic hopefully subsides behind us. And then, you know, I think your last point on getting people back to work, this is something that we wake up every morning at Deed thinking about. How do we get more people back into the labor force? We have six times more people on unemployment insurance right now than we have in a usual period of time in our state's economy. Over 300,000 people every week taking down those weekly benefit requests for unemployment insurance. And yes, that extra money from the federal government really helps. It's not making anybody rich, I'll tell you that. An extra $300 a week is not a lot of money to put food on the table. And we think it's critical just to help these families survive. But we have really reimagined how we do workforce training and outreach over the past month. We have transformed our job service team with Indeed into sort of a reverse call center. So they are every day calling up hundreds and thousands of Minnesotans who are on unemployment insurance and walking them through the job availabilities in their region, very specific, very in the weeds. It's like company X, company Y, company Z. And we're starting to see some results. People are starting to pick us up on that. You are required, if you're on unemployment insurance, to be searching for a job. So that is not something that is no longer the truth. It is the truth. And it's something that we want to continue to remind folks of. And we think that as the virus has begun to subside, big picture, that more folks are thinking differently. And of course, with kids back in school, that provides the ability to get out and work in a way that was harder for some who had to stay home and take care of kids due to distance learning. So a lot of factors here, but I can tell you, we are rapidly adapting our department's approach to be extremely proactive here. We have to be. We have to be out there talking to unemployed workers in Minnesota and letting them know the opportunities that exist. It might not be in the same industry that they left when they were dislocated from work. And that's hard for many to imagine a new career, a new field. We know that's tricky, but we have resources to help. We have training, we have job transfer materials and workshops, and companies will train on the job. So I think many people think, oh, I don't know if I could do something in a new industry. I don't have the right training. The companies will train you. And even if it's just temporary, it can get you through a period of time, make you a lot more money than unemployment insurance. And it's just important for our state's economy overall. So this is, I'm glad you raised it. This is the thing that we've got to be focused on in our economy. The speed of our recovery depends on this exact point of how many Minnesotans we can get back into the market as soon as possible. So thanks for highlighting that. And you're absolutely right.
Representative Hamilton. Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, through these discussions, what has been the total dollar amount, the total losses accrued to the Minnesota businesses that were forced to shut down? Do you have that number?
Commissioner Gould.
Chair Noor, Representative Hamilton. So you're asking me the total amount of money lost by any business that faced a restriction throughout the pandemic? If that's the question you're asking, I do not have that exact dollar figure. I don't know that.
Commissioner, would you have the percentage then of the amount of money that the businesses received through government in the form of PPP or any other government type loans or grants? What percentage covered those losses, Commissioner?
Chair Noor, Representative Hamilton, you know, there's a lot of funding sources that have been available. We as a state have put out about $127 million in grants and other programs. Of course, the PPP dollars came down from the federal government. We could take a look at that with the SBA. I think what's behind your question is, are we making businesses whole for the losses that they've had? And I don't believe that that is the case. I don't think that's even really possible. Now, with more federal funding coming into the state through this additional package, we're going to see more money flowing into those businesses. And we want to see as many of them obviously survive this pandemic. And many of them have been able to do that because of PPP, because of the program that we passed jointly with the legislature last December. It has helped. But if your question is it enough? Absolutely not. It's absolutely not enough. There's not enough money to fully make those businesses whole. And that's why this has been so hard. And we've got to work together on this next chapter here to make the recovery as fast as possible.
And Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, it'd be interesting to know what percentage that we have covered. You know, if government is closing down these businesses for the greater good, then the argument can be made that the greater good in government should pay these businesses to be closed when it comes to this pandemic. And I think there's three takeaways from the meeting here today is, one, do what we can. And I'd like to know what we can do from Bede and from the governor, what we can do to make these businesses whole. Two, a clear plan and direction to get these businesses reopened, and then building off what Representative Frankie said, or Baker, about advertising coming from our committee or whatever in the government governor's budget to advertise the reopening of these businesses. So if you can help me find out those dollars about making these businesses whole, or what percentage that we're able to get to that point, I think that'd be helpful as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you so much, Lead Hamilton. I think it's a nice segue to start with. From the data that I've been looking into, small businesses' revenue has been down for more than 32%. Knowing that we don't have enough resources to support small businesses, some of them have closed their doors, some of them are still hanging on threads and using whatever they can. I think we've done enough support at the beginning, but we need to do more moving forward. So I just wanted to ask a quick question about the small business support to the commissioner. The federal plan moving forward, I know we're looking at the budget based on where we were before the American Rescue Plan budget. The Small Business Credit Initiative, the Restaurant Revitalization Program through the SBA, the Save Our Stages through the SBA, including the support for the navigators who are there to help. And also knowing that we do have some federal resources, what is the plan from the department? Because we know we're waiting for guidance, but we also need to be more prepared to support small businesses using the federal resources that we have right now. Commissioner, what's the plan with that moving forward?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, I'll address both of your points if I could. You know, on this issue of how funds have been spent, we've been 100% transparent. We can show you all the dollars that have come from the department into small businesses across the state through a variety of programs that we've worked on together with you, and also money that came through the CARES Act as well. It's critical. And again, as I said before, never enough, but helpful. And we certainly think that this additional money coming in, as Representative Noor just mentioned, will be helpful too. You are right, Representative Noor, that we are waiting on federal guidance for many of these programs, but we're already having lots of discussions about what these might mean. We're looking back at previous packages and how that guidance has looked. You mentioned the State Small Business Credit Initiative, or SSBCI. That was last passed about a decade ago. The amount of money that we got that time was around $15 million. And we think we're likely, given the size of this federal package, to get more. We will find out in April what our allocation is. Guidance will come within 60 days after that, so we'll look there. Big picture, though, which I think is sort of your question, big picture, what are we going to do with all this? We're going to work very closely with the SBA. We're already talking with them here locally about how we can best make sure that this funding moves as quickly as possible to as many small businesses that have been hardest hit as we possibly can. And that's going to create a lot of opportunity to create programs and funding avenues that have a huge impact. Now, one of the unique aspects of those state dollars, that $2.6 billion that comes to the state, is it is one-time funding. So we've got to think about the kind of one-time funding lens when you look at ways to deploy that capital, because you can't create sort of a long-standing program that needs to be refunded time and again. It has to be this one-time hit. Think about something like broadband, kind of the perfect example of a one-time funding spend, because once the lines are in the ground, they're in the ground. That's just an example, but it gives you a sense for the kind of way to look at this. But we've got to help the businesses that have been hardest hit. And I think the same thesis the governor has brought to this budget of really recognizing the uneven effect of this pandemic, how it has changed our economy, and ensuring that our budget and our priorities match that uneven effect is going to be critical. And we've got to be building a state economy that looks to the future, that looks to the economy that we're going to have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years down the line. And many of the changes that took place throughout this pandemic really were to the acceleration of trends that we were already tracking. So when you look at some of our ideas and proposals around automation training or reskilling, that's a recognition that we've got to be preparing Minnesota's workers and companies for the next chapter of our economy. And that's what we plan to do. And we're looking forward to working with all of you on those decisions, because it's going to be a collaborative effort. It has to be.
So with that, Commissioner Grove, so should we be looking forward in terms of the funding that is coming, that is supporting businesses, looking for innovative way to help those businesses that have been hit hard, who have not received any PPP funding or any of the other resources, so that we can target those resources through deed? You know, we can plan. We don't have to execute the process, pending the guidance and also your support as legislators getting involved in making those decisions. Is that a plan that you're looking forward to, or should we be waiting until the end, which creates a little bit of a change to our, the budget that we may want to recommend?
Well, Mr. Chair, as the governor said, this is a really unique year for releasing budgets, because this federal package does influence, of course, how we'll look at the state general fund. And we want to be smart budget managers to ensure that we're not spending state dollars if there's federal dollars that could be spent instead, so long as it allows us to meet our agreed upon priorities. I will say, I don't think that every dollar for growth that comes through this federal package will go through deed. There'll be other agencies that tackle certain components of this, to be sure. But this is a time to generate great ideas. I mean, this is a really exciting time for us all to be very creative about how we might best direct these funds. And it's a really unprecedented amount of money that we'll be able to use to restart our economy. I look forward to hearing all kinds of ideas from our team at Deed, from all of you, from the community. Again, we're in the early days of this, and a lot of guidance will help us decide the kind of constraints that we'll operate within. But right now, I'd say we're in flare mode. Like, the more ideas, more creativity that we can bring to what the best uses of this funding will be, the better off we'll be. So this conversation is going to continue. I'm glad we're starting it here, but I expect to be back in this committee and in individual conversations with you and others a lot in the coming weeks and months ahead on this topic.
Looking forward for a robust conversation on that, Commissioner. The other section that I wanted to ask you, I know there was a conversation about the loss of workforce in the public health workforce area. There's some resources that are going through the Department of Health and Human Services at the federal level. I know many people who need to upskill in that field. We do have an opportunity right now. What is the plan to you or Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner Warfa? Because we need to start planning the processes right now, so that we can have a good way of recovery moving forward. Do you think we can create more initiatives that can connect? Because the governor had announced that he's looking for 10,000 workforce in the healthcare.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is an exciting component of the proposal. Obviously, President Biden has said he wants to grow our healthcare workforce substantially. The governor has echoed that in his comments. We have absolutely no idea how that's going to be rolled out at the federal level. We have no guidance on exactly how those funds will be spent, but it will come. And when it comes, Minnesota, as a leading healthcare state in our nation, needs to be at the forefront of how those dollars are spent. We think we can build a model that other states can look at, but we want to see exactly what the structure of that program is before developing a plan, because we just don't know exactly how those dollars are going to be guided. I anticipate Dee will be a part of that conversation, but you're right, DHS and others will be involved too. You know, Hamza and I, Deputy Commissioner Warfa and I, and others of the department meet almost weekly with healthcare leaders on this exact topic. And you're right to raise it, Mr. Chair, because our healthcare workforce really needs help, and at all levels of that workforce, right? And we're talking a lot as we reach out to those folks who are unemployed in Minnesota now, before even any additional federal dollars or programs get stood up, to say, look, there are jobs available in healthcare now. You may come from the service industry from a hospitality standpoint, but these jobs in healthcare also have a service component to them. They might match your skill set or temperament. We don't have to wait for a federal program to move on this. We got to move on this now. And so we're being very aggressive and assertive in these conversations with Minnesotans today on this topic. But these federal dollars, once we figure out exactly what they mean and how they can be used, are going to be a shot in the arm on this. And we're going to have to work together to spend them wisely. And I think the governor putting that number out there is trying to just seed the ground for just how important this is and create an aspirational goal and a framework for us to begin working towards.
My last question, Commissioner, I don't want to take much of the time. We will have more conversation about the Workforce Development Fund as the time goes by, and we'll be putting forward a plan for that. The question that I have is the $25 million that we put in the UI contingency account, because of the way we were framing the UI benefits. And quite frankly, with the support of the federal government, the extensions that we received that really helped Minnesotans, so we didn't have to use that funding. Do we put that as a side so that we can utilize for programs within DEED? That's a question that I just wanted to check in with you, where we are with that fund.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. And I'll just take this moment, if I could, to again thank this committee and particularly you for your hard work in passing that special unemployment insurance extension back in December. When we didn't know what the federal government was going to do, that was a huge kind of pre-Christmas present, if you will, to Minnesota, just to let unemployed workers know they're not going to be left out in the cold come the flip of the year, because our state stands up for workers. And I just, again, appreciate your hard work on that, as well as Representative Mahoney when he was in this body. You're right. Thankfully, we don't really need to use this program. And we do believe that $25 million that was put into helping buy down some of the UI trust fund debt can go back to the general fund. Ultimately, how that money is spent is up to legislators and the governor and MMB and all of us. So it's not like that money goes back into DEED per se. I'd love for it to go back into DEED. Sounds good to me. We'll find a great way to spend $25 million for the state. But again, that's something that we'll have to negotiate in the coming months. But we do believe that money is no longer needed, given the federal government did pass that extension. And so it's good for Minnesota employers that happened, good for Minnesota workers, and something that you rightly point out will save us some additional general fund dollars too.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Grove, and to your staff, Deputy Commissioner Warfa, for the presentation. Members, if there's no any other further questions, we will be adjourning for the day. So with that, see no further questions or issues, we adjourn. Thank you so much.